Welcome to the Geekscape Book Club. Very excited to talk today about the Mighty Thor, Thunder in Her Veins, which is Mighty Thor, parentheses, 2015, issues 1-5. As always, I am Christian Blatt, back for the attack, the one, the only, Michael Shirley.
Hey, you guys.
And down low on the down low is the one, the only Count Eric Connor, for our visual audience listed as Bro Jane Foster. Hello, gentlemen. Right. How appropriate that when we talk about the Mighty Thor, derisively referred to within these pages as Lady Thor, or quote, a girl with a hammer. We only have men assembled to discuss this, but we will do our best to navigate these stories and share our thoughts with all of you. I have asked neither of these gentlemen what they thought of this story. And just a quick refresher for anybody who's catching our show for the first time. The concept of the Geekscape Book Club is that these are stories that are very well known. In many cases, known for decades. This one, not quite that long. And we've just never read for whatever reason. So we read them for the first time, and then we discuss them with all of you. So this is the Aaron Dotterman Mighty Thor issues 1-5 from 2015. Michael, I want to know, what did you think of the story? And if you would like, you can start with the art, because I know how important that is to you.
Well, when you said that you wanted to do this one, I said immediately, I want to do this one for sure, because I just love Russell Dotterman's art so much. So I was intrigued to see what he would do with a more fantastical kind of world like Asgard. And it was a really, really, to me, like a visually... right up my alley, like what I like right now in comic books. And the story, I'm not a huge fan of like Lord of the Rings and like, you know, like that, and like Game of Thrones and stuff. Like, I'm not really into like all that, but
yeah, something that I derisively just lump together when I just say, yeah, I'm just not really that into Hobbit shit. You know, it's just my thing.
Yeah.
And it's just not my thing.
But, yeah, it really isn't mine either, but I love Thor. So, yeah. And I love Russell Dotterman. So I thought, let's give this a go. And I enjoyed it. I don't know that I would read on. I'm not sure. But I really did enjoy these five issues.
Yeah. Well, you know, it sort of ends, like the cliffhanger part is that the Odinson Thor that we all know is being held captive. And there is a part of me that's like, I'd kind of like to see him get inserted into all this and see how that goes. But Eric, I would like to ask you your thoughts on the Mighty Thor, Thunder in Her Veins, which I believe is something that you try to describe about an act with your wife, but she has no longer let you refer to it as Thunder in Her Veins.
It's now just a tropical storm at best, and it's probably going to be downgraded from that.
Nope, she just texted me. It's a tropical depression.
Hey, I'm better than a desert.
Fair.
I had kind of a mixed reaction to this because Thor was definitely one for me growing up, like, you know, reading Marvel comics. I didn't really seek out Thor very much. I think that was the same with you, right, Christian? Like, you were in...
Yeah, I read a lot of the Walt Simonson run and continued on. Actually, there's the Tom DeFalco, Ron Frenz stretch. But the Walt Simonson one I thought was so inventive with, like, Beta Ray Bill. And my all-time favorite Thor story, which I talk about many times on some of the other shows that I do, Frog Thor, or also known as Throg. When he gets turned into a frog, I'm just like, I love every minute of it.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm here all day long for Throg.
For Throg, yeah.
And Jane Foster, I mean, the storyline of her being sick and, you know, becoming Thor as like her last hurrah, there's some really great lines in there. And in fact, the more personal it was, the better for me it was as a read. But like similar to Michael, like I'm really not into Hobbit shit either. I love Lord of the Rings. My honeymoon was in New Zealand, actually, right when the third one was coming out. And so, like, I mean, those are amazing, but I don't really seek out fantasy. I didn't really do it as a reader. I didn't really do it with my comic books, you know. And so for this, it leads, you know, hard into the fantasy, the god stuff, which can work at times. I love the artwork on this. It definitely visually was so fun to kind of, I mean, I was on my Kindle with it, but to flip through it all was a real treat. So I'm glad I read it. I did feel like I kind of jumped into something where they didn't really set up the sides. It's a Civil War kind of story, which I thought was really interesting, but I felt like I was almost in some ways ill-equipped to feel the ramifications of the Civil War within Asgard. But it was an enjoyable read. I'm glad you recommended this one. It didn't draw me in as much as our other books have over the past couple of months.
No. And yeah, I think that Thor is always somewhat inaccessible. And I think in more recent times, as the movies have figured out the right tone, series has sort of been able to reflect that. About 2.5 years ago, you know, there've been like, I don't know, 5 Thor number ones in the last decade because they keep resetting it.
And all kinds of names for it.
Like, yeah. The most Thor, recent one started with Donny Cates, and Thor ended up being the Herald of Galactus. And it was the first time I'd read any Thor stories in, I don't know, maybe 20 years, at least 15. And something about it really just connected with me. And I was like, oh, they've kind of figured him out a lot better. You know, look, the way that he talks can be enough to make you just, you know, and Jane didn't really talk that way. She did it in the first issue, and then she didn't really talk like that again, which I found surprising. You know, it was almost like an editorial decision is like she has to stop talking, you know, like
the Halle Berry school of accents, as we call it around here, right?
Also known as the Kevin Costner school of accents, you know, but same difference.
What film was that?
Robin Hood. Thieves.
He's at British some point, in 3 scenes, and that's
and
it.
And the rest of it, you think he's a Chicagoland dock worker. But in any case, I think that, you know, having a new Thor, having it be Jane Foster, I think made it a little bit more accessible because you still have all the Asgard stuff. But I mean, this isn't like when she became Thor, like that had already happened prior to this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in fact, as I was determining what to read, I settled on this one because the cancer storyline seemed to be in the forefront. And that's what I think was most clearly reflected in Thor Love and Thunder, which is now available on Disney Plus. Have you had a chance to watch it yet, Michael, or not yet?
Yes, I watched it. Wow. A day or
sometime in the last few days. So what did you think of the movie? And did you watch the movie after you read this or before you read this?
Before. Okay. I watched this before I read this. Yeah.
So what did you think of the movie just in general terms?
I liked it. The thing that was kind of most irritating to me was the rock guy, Taika Waititi's
Korg.
Yeah, like when they blew him up, I was like, oh, finally, like enough of this, like song and dance. And then come to find out the one thing that wouldn't stop talking, his face was the only thing left behind. It's kind of like, But I thought it was a lot of fun. I like the camp. I mean, I don't like when the comic books are just strictly so serious and you don't get like kind of a funny series every once in a while. So I thought it was needed. Like, I think that it's important to show like all different aspects of the Marvel universe, and a lot of it's campy, and especially in the older days, and this you know, kind of harkens to that. But
I think that there's a reason that why both you and I like Excalibur as much as we do. I'm talking about the original late 80s run, the very silly tongue-in-cheek era of it. And Eric and I, at one point, we felt like we were in the minority on Thor: Love and Thunder because we liked it. As Thor says in the movie, it's a classic Thor adventure. Don't think too much about it. Just have fun. Although I did get a message from a friend who was watching it for the first time last night. He's like, yeah, I'm 20 minutes in and I think I'm on Gore the God Killer side. I'm like, you know what? He's kind of like Thanos in the way that, like, up until a point, you're like, you're making sense. Whoa, hold on, too much. You know? So as all good villains, you know, they usually start with a point and you go like, huh, it's starting to make some sense. But I thought that movie was fun. I think that this is able to really kind of, you know, having the book be from Jane's point of view, I think really helps amplify that theme and just, you know, her dealing with the cancer. And, you know, I think that one of the things I thought, and you tell me if you agree, Eric, is it just made you realize what a good job they did in the film of, you know, the contrast between Thor, Natalie Portman, and cancer-ridden Jane, Natalie Portman. And we really get to see that, you know, obviously it's much easier to do in a comic, but the contrast, I think, it just reminded me of how much they did in the movie. What did you think as you read this, Eric?
You know, I think because the comic has, a little more luxury in terms of, like, getting us into her head, you know, I actually found the stuff involving her, be it chemo or I guess it was chemotherapy that she had, not radiation per se, but I found that really powerful in ways that the movie didn't necessarily go as far down that road. Like, she, even at those early scenes, you know, she looked like Natalie Portman. She looked better than most of the universe, you know, even when she's sitting there getting chemo. But I mean, towards the end of the film, we saw her more look sickly, but those early scenes made chemo seem like, you know, it's okay. And it's not. It's horrible. And I thought the comic book reflected that really smartly. And the description of, like, what it felt like, the, you know, the veins in her veins, and it was cold and hot. And I found that writing to be really effective in ways that I don't think would have worked in the movie anyway, because then it would have gotten a little treachy, a little melodramatic. So I think the movie smartly did what it had to do. But the comic wasn't afraid to be start on a pretty dramatic note, actually. So I actually found both worked, one far more grounded, weirdly enough, than the other. And the one that's more grounded is the comic book, weirdly enough. You know, often you would think it would be the other way around.
Yeah. Also, you know, a character obviously present in this book that could not be present in the movie, much to the relief of Michael Shirley, is Loki. Michael, for those that don't know, not a fan of Tom Hiddleston Loki, you are definitely in it on an island all of your own in that respect, but you rule that island. You're very happy on that island, and you will continue to live on that island until the rest of your days. But Loki in the book, I'm wondering, what did you think of this iteration of Loki, a sort of, you know, proudly return to villainy Loki, trying to impress his frost giant daddy Loki. What did you think of this specific Loki?
I thought that they modeled this Loki exactly after Tom Hiddleston's portrayal of Loki, so that's pretty much all I think about that.
Exactly what I thought, and I wondered if you felt the same way, if you felt like you know, there was the section with, like, all the many different Lokis, that reminded me, of course, of the TV series on Disney Plus. But one of those Lokis, I'm like, yeah, that's the Loki I used to read comics with, you know. not the Tom Hiddleston. Let's just call him Loki Suave, I think is really the look that they're going for.
I'm all for like leotard Loki.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I am too. What did you think, Eric?
I was focusing a lot on his facial hair. I don't know if you all have that experience too.
A little bit.
I had a lot of questions about it. It was very detailed and a very, you know, kind of, that was like my like high school facial hair.
It looks like someone drew it with a squiggle wiggle.
Hey, you know, I'm here for the props. I'm always here for prop comedy. So,
Yes, we are the carrot top of Geekscape. And I say that for a specific reason, Michael.
I love Carrot Top.
He loves Carrot Top. Yeah.
Oh, as you should.
Call me Carrot Top. Call me.
Yeah. Well, you two have single. A very similar build, as do I, actually. So I could totally see it. this Loki, too, the moment where he turns on his mom, I thought was kind of great. Because, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm a villain again. And then he's like, I'm not. But with Loki, the fun of Loki is you always know at some point he's gonna F some stuff up. And him stabbing his mom, that was a scene I actually said out loud very quietly, oh, dear. And I never say, oh, dear.
No, and yet I did. I've known you long enough to know that you are not a big oh, dear guy.
No, oy vey, sure. But oh, dear, not so much. And then I love that little postscript where, like, I know you know your way around poison, so either you're kind of like you're really like good at it or really terrible at it. And so you get that sense he didn't intend to kill her in that postscript, but it still was a great moment. And I did like how that played out. I kind of wish Loki, I don't know, was a little more involved in the story in terms of driving the narrative. Kind of felt more like he was a passenger.
I did like that they sort of featured this moment, you know, Jane as our narrator, remembering her earliest dealings with Loki and, you know, sort of pointing to the fact that the earliest Thor stories were Loki kidnaps Jane Foster so that Thor comes after her and then he can, you know, try and kill Thor. And, you know, he has no idea who she is. And, you know, references, I think it was one of the alternate Lokis, one of the variants, if you will, who was like, why don't we just kidnap somebody she loves? You know, it was almost like, yeah, that's what we do, you know? and I did appreciate sort of the self-awareness. That's not like a She-Hulk wink and a, you know, talk to the camera, but I did appreciate the self-awareness of it. When Loki is done right, whether it's on the screen or on the page, or I suppose there must be a podcast version of Loki somewhere, I would say that you don't really know for sure what side he's on because he's only on his own side. So he's playing everybody. And that is a reason to at least consider, for me, reading the next volume of this, just to kind of see, you know, where it goes. Did he actually want to give the appearance of killing his mother but not actually kill her?
Mm-hmm. Wanted to poison her for a second.
Yeah. That's the thing. When Loki poisons you, it's just the tip. So, you know, you just always have to know just how much. It's very Shakespearean to poison.
Oh, sure, for sure. There was a great line in there too that was actually Jane Foster's, like, you know, in her thoughts, where it's like something her dad said to her about, you know, someone's like kind of bad news, like even when they smile, they make you feel uncomfortable. Yeah, like, that's a great description of Loki. You know, and both Tom Hiddleston's performance, but then also in the comic, you know, like when he's smiling, you know, he's up to some shit.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very like used car dealer politician quality to, like, you know, like, oh, this is a really big smile, you know. And you know, to mention back to the X-Men universe for a moment, you know, the great character of Mojo is always smiling. He's never not smiling, you know. So there's something to be said for that. But I haven't read anything with Mojo in it in a long time. Do they even still use him, Michael? I think.
Yeah,
I think
he got his own issue in X-Men Black a couple of years ago.
That's good because not a Claremont creation and Ann Nesenti, Arthur Adams creation from the Longshot miniseries. But,
he was in the new X Factor around issue around 13, I think, in Mojo World for a while.
Well, maybe one day we'll get to visit Mojo World, but until then, we'll stay here. What do we think about the actual, the story that ran through these five issues, which for the most part is kind of the Elf War, but then also the Civil War in Asgard, the Dark Elves versus the Light Elves, which I didn't know I was invested in, that much. I remembered Malekith very well. Well, yeah, because that was like the Walt Simonson like split face of his was very pronounced in my memory. So I was like, oh yeah, I haven't seen him in a long time. Like the last time I saw him, probably Baldur the Brave was around. So that's how long
ago it was.
Baldur, and I was a little disappointed that we didn't get any Beta Ray Bill in this book, but we did get the Warriors 3 and a lot of the other supporting characters, including Heimdall, a lot of times now when I've read some of these more recent volumes, you just feel like they're really writing them for people who do watch the movies. And they're like, we'll catch you up enough. Yes, it's set in our continuity that goes back like 80 years. Or I guess in the case of Thor, 5,000 years or something? I'm not quite sure. But whatever the case, you really feel like they're just trying to have continuations of the movies. Because, look, that's who's going to pick these up for the first time. Did you find you were kind of saying that you felt like this Loki was really the Tom Hiddleston Loki. Did you find that was the case for a lot of the book, Michael, or for the most part, did it manage to feel like the same Thor that however much you had read before this, did it feel more consistent with that or more consistent with the movies?
I mean, Thor Odinson isn't like in this book, but I read the first issue a few days ago, and then I finished them up this morning, and I just watched the movie. It seems like they took a lot from this book for the movie. Along with it, this weird, like, kind of not really explained, like, how Jane is so, like, quickly wrapped up into Asgardian society. Like it's really just like, oh yeah, that was Thor's girlfriend, she can do whatever she wants, is kind of like the attitude. And it that seems like really unfleshed out in both of these. Like, it seemed like, do you ever remember like her and Valkyrie ever having that much to do with each other?
If you're talking about on the screen, Valkyrie, we didn't meet Valkyrie until Ragnarok.
So it's just like, you want to think, I guess they've met before, but like probably not. And it was just kind of weird that they were also in sync and that they would let like an outsider just in and just accept this whole like Thor. You hear what I almost said? This whole Thor thing with a completely different person and a completely different gender literally changes the person's hair color to like blonde. It's all a little sketch to me, but I guess you just have to be willing to accept that and move on for it to just get past it.
They didn't know her identity, right? Wasn't something in the book too, where
no one knows except for
her buddy, who I love, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, that big old round guy.
Is that Volstagg or did I make that up?
You mean actually... my costume for Halloween 22?
The guy that accompanies her to like her.
Yeah, I loved him, by the way.
I always liked him. We're talking about this fella.
That was my favorite shot. I love that. We're just you have someone to take you home, and it's him
in the waiting room. Yeah, she
with his hand in a bag of chips, which is
I like that touch. Yeah, that he fell asleep.
Much like I have, Eric has no doubt been on hand for the birth of two children, and there's a lot of downtime when you're the fella. So I definitely fell asleep with my hand in a bag of chips. So
downtime when you're the mama.
No. It is the opposite.
Kick in to get out.
You're talking about before they're born.
Yeah. No. This is the before. Yeah. There is plenty of downtime for us. And
Lauren made sure to get a bunch of pictures of me asleep, like during those days. Like it was hysterical. Like anytime I nodded off, like she grabbed a camera and made sure that was part of the album. It was me totally out. But I was awake when both arrived, so I had that going for me.
About when they were made.
One of them for certain, the other one maybe.
He may not have even been in the house.
Oh, I think, milkman.
I think I sent her a letter and that was all it took. I'm not good. Snail mail, mind you.
Of course. I appreciate the supporting cast. I mean, they are so well defined, and I don't know. I mean, I think it would be interesting to have read this when it first came out, because they would have had two Thor movies by then, I guess, because Dark World would have come out before 2015. So I don't know. It would have been interesting to see how it would have felt at that point, but. Also, some of this stuff is clearly so referred back to. But in general, I mean, I'd say at face value, I enjoyed this book. I am intrigued a little bit about where it goes, but I may not actually go through the process. Like some of those other ones, like Doctor Strange, I kept reading. We did Ms. Marvel. Partially, I kept reading because I wanted to get to the issue with Wolverine when we did Ms. Marvel last month. But
how many issues did you read?
I read like 9 Wolverine. Like I think we did 1 to 5 with Ms. Marvel, and Wolverine was in like issue 7. So I was always going at least that far because I had seen the cover, and look, I talked about it last month, but that is, I think, a Logan I always enjoy reading, the one with sort of like the young superpowered individual that he takes under his very wise wing, the Jubilee, Kitty Pryde, Katie Power sort of role that, he's a really good dad to everybody except X-23, but that's neither here nor. I would say that, somebody who did enjoy the movie, this would be a good series to read. Would you recommend this to, you're saying yes, Michael. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And Eric, would you say the same? Whether somebody did or didn't like the movie, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because I know our friend Kate did not like that movie, but I feel like, well, then just read this. I think you'd probably enjoy it.
There's enough here to recommend. I mean, I don't know if you guys found this, but I found it just really hard because the sort of setup, the world build, it seemed like it was a continuation of like another series. And I know like when they go back to number one, oftentimes it's like a soft reboot, so to speak. But I found like there was a lot, and they occasionally, as they do in comics, they reference other issues. But
there was a reference in this to Thor number 8. From 2014, which this was 2015. Yeah. So I'm like, so did they not even get to 12 before they started again?
Love right, those right. Number ones.
Yeah.
They sell well.
But don't step in number
they used
two.
To.
They still do.
I guess, yeah. And then we always get the good old fashioned legacy numbering to come back around.
Yeah.
We
appreciate that they're keeping count for me.
Well, because then you can sell yet another milestone issue. You can sell those number ones, and then you can also sell Amazing Spider-Man 900, you know? So
something to get excited about.
I don't know. I mean, the current Zeb Wells, John Romita Jr. run on Spidey, I think, is better than a lot that I had read recently. I don't know. I enjoy those visuals for sure. But Eric, I know you sent me an avalanche of images that I want to share for our visual audience, but don't worry, audio listeners. We'll describe them. Yes.
Painstakingly slow detail.
Yeah, we'll be like FDR's fireside chats when the newspapers were all on strike, and he described, yeah, and then in the next panel, little Abner says. So what were some of the things? Do you want me to just cycle through them and then
whatever? Listen, you're the DJ and the rapper. I'm just the guy who hangs out with this craft services.
So. Earlier I was talking about Malkeith, and I do think that he is visually striking, and to show him on screen in a film might be easier said than done. But was this image that you chose, was it because of what he said or how he looked? So,
well, first, I do love the design of him. So, you know, but I also love the idea of a villain so arch. Shall we drink a toast, my friends, to the pleasures of war? You know, that's like something like Mr. Burns might say. So it's just so like a mustache twirling or I guess in his case, ear twirling villain. I thought he was, I liked him, but I don't think they used him enough. I mean, it was setting up what felt like, you know, the next series of issues more so than I thought he was going to be a bigger cog in the sort of engine of this story. But I did find like they sent him up. He seemed kind of interesting. And then I don't know if you guys felt this too. It just sort of like disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that they shifted back to Asgard when they did, I'm like, when he, you know, tricks the queen into marrying him, or really that's all the Enchantress, I was just like, oh no, now I care about that story, you know? But I guess when you're publishing an ongoing monthly book, I guess that's the way to do it. What do you think, Michael? Do you feel like they underutilized him, or was it just the right amount and you wanted to get back to Asgard?
Well, this isn't a Malkeith story or whatever. It's like, you know, in the credits would be like with Malkeith. I honestly got into it when Enchantress came in, and that was like a really blended surprise, because I've always really had kind of an affinity for that character and really would love to see her introduced through Thor, but I'd love to see her on the big screen with like versus Wanda or like with the Wanda. I just think that's a really fun character, but I did like how easily he tricked them.
Yeah,
it's just like a little too comic book perfect, but I wasn't like hugely invested in him, I guess.
Oh, I did like his wedding vows though. That was something I sent you, because it reminded me of the greatest wedding vows ever, Ming the Merciless from Flash Gordon.
Short and sweet.
I do have the wedding vows, but
that was a honeymoon.
Yeah, I don't remember Ming the Merciless wedding vows, but
do you take this bride to be your bride of the hour? Of the hour, yes. Do you promise not to blast her off into space until such time as you may grow weary of her? Certainly. That's the best. I try to work that into my wedding, but you know, I wanted to actually get married, and that was kind of a deal breaker.
So. Yeah. So what he says in this book is war waits for no elf, as they say. So let us skip to the most important part. I do with all my blackened heart. But then of course she's like, I do too. I do, you know, and I know that for you, Eric, you appreciated the vows, but perhaps just as much appreciated the realization of what she had done. And I believe that it reminded you of a night in particular that
19 years ago at a temple in Delaware. Yes. God, what have I done? No. Yeah,
going on. And then of course he's like, a toast, my dear friend. So, you know, you with the gang from that you knew from Newark, Delaware, of course, were all circling around you. And by the way, I envision your gang basically being the same composition as the gang from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, because I feel like everyone from that part of the country has the same group of friends, you know, basically. Well, really, you just had Charlie. I don't think you actually had anybody else.
I had like seven Charlies, and that's it.
Any group of Philly guys I know, there are like seven Charlies. That's pretty much it. There are zero D's and like a half a Dennis. But anyway, I did find that to be entertaining. And I'm like, well, they're going to have to sort that out at some point, aren't they? You know, and like, is Jane going to go like rush off and try and fix that? Or is that one of those ones where like, you know, 2 years later, they're like, oh yeah, remember that? Oh, we should really do something.
She's about still that. In the dungeon.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. So I don't know. I found those all to be high points though. I enjoyed some of those visuals. There is some comedy, which I think is something we've come to expect from the Thor, whether he be mighty, he or she be mighty or otherwise. And, you know, it's not a character that should be funny, but they have figured out the correct tone. One of the things that you sent to me, though, was sort of Jane taking on a few of the Hammer Guard, I believe. Now, this image that I'm sharing with her visual audience, was it because she says, gah?
Yes, that it was. Really why?
Yeah, I'm like, I know you well enough. I'm like, I think it's probably because of the
word. It's all about the gog or the gag. There was a series of words in there that I don't think I've ever seen in a comic to indicate like, you know, sound of, I don't know, a hammer being crushed against someone's skull. But this was one in a series where all of them, it's as if they ran out of every other word, or it was just really late at night, and they're like, what about gag? They're like, can we put that in there? It's 2 a.m. I want to get home. So gag. Why not? Gag.
Yeah. Like the cocoon and wadoom like stuff is what we're talking about. You see that a lot in like new Batman comics. DC does a lot of kawakadoos and kadungadoodongs.
I once saw, not spelled the way mine was, but on the 66 Batman show, once the sound effect was blat, but it was B-L-A-T-T, but I took it. I'm like, that's me. I'm a Batman sound effect. and that's, you know, look.
Claims look at you
to,
now.
I know. Claims to fame are very fleeting at times. You know, we were speaking about the Enchantress earlier. And so there's a very wordy passage where she's interacting with Malekith. So was there something about this interaction, or was it what they were saying? What was this about? What was it about this for you, Eric?
Let's see. Now it's funny. Now it's like I got to zoom myself.
But he's saying, your time will come, my dear Amora, I promise you, which I guess... you know, and she's weary of his promises, and you know, very wordy. Some of these books, I guess Tom Orzechowski was unavailable for the lettering, and
It was one too where this is where it would kind of lose me a bit too. Is like, join me in the Dark Council. Where it was like, okay, like exposition, two spoonfuls at a time. It's like, you know, they. And I get it, you know, with the comic, you have the panel, and they're trying to keep the subplots going, but it was like some moments like that where I found myself like kind of wanting to get to the next panel, get back to the other story.
Yeah.
It's like they're trying too hard to get so much in there in one panel, which
I never appreciate. When we did the George Perez Wonder Woman, there had been a lot of sort of those moments where you were like, there are going to be a lot of words here. But I mean, some of these visuals are great. You know,
that's when I was like, I don't want to read this one.
Yeah.
Well, but I do like him saying, "I'm trying to run a war here, my dear." Like, it is such an over that. What's funny too, because this guy would make sense in, you know, Ragnarok's kind of comedic tone, but it is very different from the rest of the tone of these issues we read. So I found like that subplot and that character, as enjoyable as I found him, it did feel like it was just from such a different source as the rest of it. So I, you know, again, kind of as much as I like this, I just bumped up against a lot of it because the tonal shifts or just throwing too much plot at us, too much exposition all at once. So it wasn't as smooth as some of our other recent reads.
Yeah, no, but one of the things that you referenced earlier was not just Loki, but specifically his facial hair. So I feel like you chose this because this looks as though, you know, he's, I don't know, like 15, whatever the equivalent is in Asgardian years, and he just can't.
Well,
he just
can't get squiggle wiggle.
Yeah, he just can't get a good beard going. I do love the symbols for swearing in comic books. I haven't run into that in a while. You used to get it a lot more. This is a good, I thought that this was a good Loki speech that he had. You know, he's just like, I am Loki.
Yeah.
And a Loki isn't a slave to the whims of his ancestors. A Loki writes his own story. And since you've been dead for so very long, Father, I'll forgive you for not knowing, but my story has been rather fan-fucking-tastically good for a long time, for quite a long damn while now. So double expletives in there from the Prince of Lies, Prince of Mischief, as he were. I don't know. I think that I feel like these are probably fun characters to write because of this sort of over the top nature of, you know, who they are. And I find Loki can be very entertaining, and the more Lokis you get, the better. And as we referenced, there were sort of the Loki variants, and that was one of the things that that Eric highlighted. You did notice just how many we don't have alligator Loki in here, but we've got a cat Loki. And then this one that, as we look at him, is to our right, his left. That's like, that's the Loki I always read. Yeah, that's the one that I always read. The one that's like sitting on his throne with his goblet of mead empty, and he's just too lazy to make somebody fill it for him. The Loki that I liked was always full of trickery and trying to kill people. But in the X-Men Asgardian Wars, there's this whole sequence after the Shadow King had left behind Karma, and she like was just disgustingly like, I don't know, 500 pounds. I'm not even sure how big she was because of the way Bill Sienkiewicz drew her. You weren't really sure if it was human. And she like wanders through the desert and she loses all of this weight. And Loki's had previously put everybody back the way they were when they got to Asgard. And he's like, not even I could do that to you, where, you know, puts her back to the 500 pounds. So he had his moments, I guess, is the point, you know. And I like that Loki where he's just like, I got nothing to gain from, you know, from this poor girl looking like that. I don't know. I think that I do agree with Michael's assessment. This is Tom Hiddleston Loki that they want to give people. But that's what people are going to be used to. That's what the people want. Everybody except you on your island. On your non-Hiddleston island.
Non-Hiddleston, non-Han island.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people aren't allowed on that island.
No. Yeah.
No, oh, you mean Catherine Han. I thought you were talking about Harrison Ford. I was so confused. Yeah, no Catherine Han either. When you say Han, I assumed you were talking about Solo. Is that why you highlighted that image? Just because you liked how many Lokis we got, and I assume it reminded you of the TV series.
Yeah, well, and to the point, even the frame, the first time we saw the Lokis, very much felt like it was completely inspired by that one. So, yeah, I mean, it's fun kind of seeing how this comic book definitely, you know, there are moments that felt like the Loki TV show grabbed a piece of, a small piece, but a piece nonetheless. So, yeah, it was cool. I mean, the idea that this series could inspire, you know, the sort of whole spectrum of Thor stories we currently have, including, of course, Loki's, which I know makes Michael happy that we have Loki season two.
Yeah. I know why you picked this one, because of what you titled the email. So yes, we have the Warriors 3. Actually, I don't know. And actually, this is a different collection of characters.
Yeah, no, it's not Sif.
But anyway, so, and I forget his name, actually, the blonde fellow. But
all I care about is Hildegard.
Yeah, well, yeah, Hildegard's not having none of it. No. You know, she's like, I am not here for your bullshit. And I never have, never will. I assume it's because he looks the way he does. And he says, you're the one who belongs in a cell, serpent. Don't think for a second we don't see how you've bewitched your brother.
That's right. For the audio audience, Hulk Hogan, any chance to bring up the Hulk Hogan figure from She-Hulk or this, where it says, I Hogan with a U.
Yeah.
Is Hogan one of these characters?
I guess Hogan is, you know, part of the Asgardian favorites. You know, I don't quite know.
And Hulk and this guy have never met each other, which feels like
Green Hulk should meet Hogan. Is that what you're saying?
A boy can dream.
Yeah, a boy can dream. Speaking of dreams, by the way, before we wind down here for this month, next month, we are going to leave Marvel for at least a little while, not going so obscure, but much in keeping with the theme of stuff we've heard of for a long time that we know we should have read and just haven't. I think on October 9th, which is a Sunday, but don't hold me to it, we will read the first volume of Neil Gaiman's Sandman, which is currently a series on Netflix, which I've started, by the way. I was going to watch the Lord of the Rings show on Amazon, and I was like, yeah, I can't pull the trigger on that. Let me watch Sandman. I've wanted to watch that for a while. So that'll be our next story here for the book club. So find us here on Geekscape, I believe, on October 9th, sometime in the evening. We like to play fast and loose with our schedules and all of yours. What are our sort of final thoughts on this Thor volume, Thunder in Her Veins? I'll ask you first, Michael.
I think this was and will continue to be a really important story in the Thor continuity. It gives some relatable change. You were speaking earlier about how, you know, most people can't relate to being a god and just dealing with those troubles, you know, for, I don't know, like 50 years. So it definitely added a real feminine touch, which it seems they're really enjoying messing with kind of gender roles and the Asgardian and like more fantasy kind of stuff in the MCU. And I would, like you asked earlier, I would recommend it to anyone who wants to know about Thor or Jane or just, you know, any of the MCU movies as comic books. I'd say, you know, this is a really good one.
Yeah, I think for people who specifically liked Love and Thunder, I think that this is a great, you know, first volume to crack open and go from there. What about you, Eric? Your Jerry Springer final thoughts here as we wind down talking about Thunder in Her Veins.
Yeah, I think I would recommend, if like you're not super up to speed on Thor, maybe do a little bit of homework before starting page one.
That's fair. Yeah,
some of the characters are, how, you know, Jane getting there as the new Thor. That will be, being said, I mean, the fact that for five issues, we didn't have the Thor we're used to. we didn't have the male Thor, and I didn't miss him, which I thought was kind of interesting too. Like, yeah. I liked Jane's role in this. I really did like the, you know, we're so used to seeing Loki betray everyone, his family, and anyone who ever puts a little faith in him. I really dug that it was Odin and his wife were like at war with each other, and it felt kind of Shakespearean, you know? And so I thought like the family dynamic was interesting, this kind of civil war element, which they built it up a little bit as mentioned, but I do think the illustrations alone might be a reason to take a look at this. And, you know, they definitely like have enough of a sense of humor along the way, you know, like when Jane could say, like, after everything I've gone through, it felt good to punch a god in the face. And like that, that's, it was a really, you know, definitely moments of introspection I thought really played nicely on the page. So it's definitely worth it, but just be warned if you're not, you know, completely in the know on Thor and on your gods, you might want to do a little bit of homework.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's true. If you're not caught up in your gods or your goshes.
I feel like this is a storyline offends Eric's Jewish faith.
Why would it? There was no harm fell upon any pastrami or gefilte fish. I was fine.
No, but the I should have looked up whether or not that character's name is Volstagg. You know, the coworker waiting in the waiting room, he would have demolished pastrami and gefilte fish had it been anywhere in his sight. I enjoyed having an excuse to read this, you know, because a lot of times after a movie, I think like, oh yeah, I'd really like to read some of that. And then I just, I don't get around to it. So in any case, very excited to have gotten the opportunity to share this with everyone. And as I said, we'll be back, I believe, October 9th, talking about Sandman. Until then, Eric, where can people find you?
Come and visit me, Instagram or Twitter at Count Eric Connor.
And Michael?
You find me on Instagram at I Hate Michael Shirley and on Twitter at Michael X Shirley.
And you can always find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. For those of you watching live or possibly the day after, tomorrow, September 12th, I'll be a guest on the main Geekscape podcast, giving my thoughts on the announcements we got out of D23, specifically the Marvel ones, any Marvel announcements that we didn't get in terms of pretty much anything about the Fantastic Four. Matt Shackman's directing, and a cast of our actors we still don't know. We will continue talking about that on the show that the three of us do over on my YouTube channel, The Black Cast, BLADTCAST, Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Central, Michael. And we'll start off talking about that. But right now we're also doing weekly reactions to She-Hulk. And yes, my friend who's a copyright lawyer will be joining us on Thursday as we talk about the lawsuit at the center of that episode. Also on the Blackcast, I did just celebrate our 500th episode where I spoke with John Lovitz for 2 hours. And recently, at the end of the week, we had 4 episodes last week. On the 4th episode, we did show some cameos that people had bought for us, including one purchased for me by Count Eric Connor. I almost called you Sir Eric Connor, but I suppose that's appropriate as we talk about Asgardian things. From Fred the Elephant Boy of the Howard Stern Show Whack Pack, but also a wonderful video montage he compiled along with my wife, who came up with some people to say nice things about me, which is exactly why Michael was not featured in it, because it was only people saying nice things about me. But
you want me to send a video at like 3 a.m. and I
that's all right. It's fine.
I sent it was 3 a.m. I sent it them a week before that as well.
Well, I didn't see it until like,
that's not my fault.
And
Michael, though, you might've been the highlight though. Like Michael's image with his suggestion, by the way, comment redacted.
Yes,
under the comment was redacted. Beautiful looking headshot.
As two people who have received communication from Michael at 3 a.m, it is best that he did not record a video. But anyway, all of that can be found on the Blackcast YouTube channel, BLADTCIST. Subscribe to the audio version over there. Especially if you enjoy this kind of in-depth conversation, we do focus that on She-Hulk, and we continue to do that every week over there. But that's all the time we have for this month. We'll see you next month on an episode that will only be able to be called Enter Sandman. Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.